and get through. I grab my knife and get up, trying to ignore the ache in my shoulder. I run over to one of the dead Dauntless traders near the doorway. She was middle-aged. There are hints of gray in her dark hair. I try not to look at the bullet wound in her head, but the dim light glows on what looks like bone, and I gag. Think. I don't care who she was, or what her name was, or how old she was. I care only about the blue armband she wears. I have to focus on that. I try to hook my finger around the fabric, but it doesn't come loose. It appears to be attached to her black jacket. I will have to take that, too. I unzip my jacket and toss it over her face so I don't have to look at her. Then I unzip her jacket and pull it, first from her left arm, then from her right arm, gritting my teeth as I slide it from beneath her heavy body. Triss, someone says. I turn around, jacket in one hand, knife in the other. I put the knife away. The invading Dauntless weren't carrying them, and I don't want to be conspicuous. Uriah stands behind me. Divergent? I ask him. There is no time to be shocked. Yeah, he says. Get a jacket, I say. He crouches next to one of the other Dauntless traders. This one young, not even old enough to be a Dauntless member. I flinch at the sight of his death-pale face. Someone so young shouldn't be dead. Shouldn't even have been here in the first place. My face hot with anger. I shrug the woman's jacket on. Uriah pulls his own jacket on, his mouth pinched. They are the only ones who are dead, he says quietly. Something about that seemed wrong to you? They must have known we would shoot at them, but they came anyway, I say. Questions later. We have to get up there. Up there? Why? He says. We should get out of here. You want to run away before we know what's going on? I scowl at him. Before the Dauntless upstairs know what hit them? What if someone recognizes us? I shrug. We just have to hope they won't. I sprint toward the stairwell and he follows me. As soon as my foot touches the first stair, I wonder what on earth I intend to do. There are bound to be more of the Divergent in this building. But will they know what they are? Will they know to hide? And what do I expect to gain from submerging myself in an army of Dauntless traitors? Deep inside me, I know the answer. I am being reckless. I will probably gain nothing. I will probably die. And more disturbing still, I don't really care. They'll work their way upward, I say between breaths. So you should go to the third floor. Tell them to evacuate quietly. Where are you going then? Floor two, I say. I shove my shoulder into the second door. I know what to do on the second floor. Look for the Divergent. As I walk down the hallway, stepping over unconscious people dressed in black and white, I think of a verse of the song Candor Children used to sing when they thought no one could hear them. Dauntless is the cruelest of the five. They tear each other to pieces. It has never seemed truer to me than now. Watching Dauntless traitors induce a sleeping simulation that is not so different from the one that forced them to kill members of Abnegation not a month ago. We are the only faction that could divide like this. Amity would not allow a schism. No one in Abnegation would be so selfish. Candor would argue until they found a common solution, and even Erudite would never do something so illogical. We really are the cruelest faction. I step over a draped arm and a woman with her mouth hanging open, and hum the beginning of the next verse of the song under my breath. Erudite is the coldest of the five. Knowledge is a costly thing. I wonder when Janine realized that Erudite and Dauntless would make a deadly combination. Ruthlessness and cold logic, it seems, can accomplish almost anything, including putting 1.5 factions to sleep. I scan faces and bodies as I walk, searching for irregular breaths, flickering eyelids, anything to suggest that people lying on the ground are just pretending to be unconscious. So far, all the breathing is even, and all eyelids are still. Maybe none of the Candor are Divergent. Eric! I hear someone shout from down the hall. I hold my breath as he walks right toward me. I try not to move. If I move, he'll look at me, and he'll recognize me. I know it. I look down, and tense so hard I tremble. Don't look at me. Don't look at me. Don't look at me. Eric strides past me and down the hallway to my left. I should continue my search as quickly as possible, but curiosity urges me forward, toward whoever called for Eric. The shout sounded urgent. When I lift my eyes, I see a dauntless soldier standing over a kneeling woman. She wears a white blouse and a black skirt, and has her hands behind her head. Eric's smile looks greedy, even in profile. "Divergent," he says.
"Well done.
Bring her to the elevator bank. We'll decide which ones to kill and which ones to bring back later." The dauntless soldier grabs the woman by the ponytail and starts toward the elevator bank, dragging her behind him. She shrieks and then scrambles to her feet, bent over. I try to swallow, but it feels like I have a wad of cotton balls in my throat. Eric continues down the hallway, away from me, and I try not to stare as the candor woman stumbles past me, her hair still trapped in the fist of the dauntless soldier. But now, I know how terror works. I let it control me for a few seconds, and then force myself to act. 1, 2, 3. I start forward with a new sense of purpose, watching each person to see if their awake is taking too much time. The next unconscious person I come across, I step hard on their pinky finger. No response, not even a twitch. I step over them and find the next person's finger, pressing hard with the toe of my shoe. No response there either. I hear someone else shout, "Got one!" from a distant hallway and start to feel frantic. I hop over fallen man after fallen woman, over children and teenagers and the elderly, stepping on fingers or stomachs or ankles, searching for signs of pain. I barely see their faces after a while, but still I get no response. I am playing hide-and-seek with the divergent, but I'm not the only person who's it. And then it happens. I step on a candor girl's pinky, and her face twitches. Just a little. An impressive attempt at concealing the pain, but enough to catch my attention. I look over my shoulder to see if anyone is near me, but they've all moved on from this central hallway. I check for the nearest stairwell. There's one just 10 feet away, down a side hallway to my right. I crouch next to the girl's head. "Hey, kid," I say as quietly as I can. "It's okay. I'm not one of them." Her eyes open just a little. "There's a staircase about 3 yards away," I say. "I'll tell you when no one is watching, and then you have to run. Understand?" She nods. I stand and turn in a slow circle. A dauntless traitor to my left is looking away, nudging a limp dauntless with her foot. 2 dauntless traitors behind me are laughing about something. One in front of me is spacing out in my direction, but then he lifts his head and starts down the hallway again away from me. "Now," I say. The girl gets up and sprints toward the door to the stairwell. I watch her until the door clicks shut and see my reflection in one of the windows. But I'm not standing alone in a hallway of sleeping people like I thought. Eric is standing right behind me. I look at his reflection, and he looks back at me. I could make a break for it. If I move fast enough, he might not have the presence of mind to grab me. But I know, even as the idea occurs to me, that I won't be able to outrun him, and I won't be able to shoot him, because I didn't take a gun. I spin around, bringing my elbow up as I do, and thrust it toward Eric's face. It catches the end of his chin, but not hard enough to do any damage. He grabs my left arm with one hand and presses a gun barrel to my forehead with the other, smiling down at me. "I don't understand," he says. "How could you possibly be stupid enough to come up here with no gun?" "Well, I'm smart enough to do this," I say. I stomp hard on his foot, which I fired a bullet into less than a month ago. He screams, his face contorting, and drives the heel of the gun into my jaw. I clench my teeth to suppress a groan. Blood trickles down my neck. He broke the skin. Through all that, his grip on my arm does not loosen once. But the fact that he didn't just shoot me in the head tells me something. He's not allowed to kill me yet. I was surprised to discover you were still alive, he says, considering I'm the one who told Janine to construct that water tank just for you. I try to figure out what I can do that will be painful enough for him to release me. I've just decided on a hard kick to the groin when he slips behind me and grabs me by both arms, pressing against me so I can barely move my feet. His fingernails dig into my skin, and I grit my teeth, both from the pain and from the sickening feeling of his chest on my back. She thought studying one of the Divergent's reaction to a real-life version of a simulation would be fascinating, he says, and he presses me forward, so I have to walk. His breath tickles my hair, and I agreed. You see, ingenuity, one of the qualities we most value in Erudite, requires creativity. He twists his hands so the calluses scrape against my arms. I shift my body slightly to the left as I walk, trying to position one of my feet between his advancing feet. I notice with fierce pleasure that he's limping. Sometimes, creativity seems wasteful, illogical, unless it's done for a greater purpose. In this case, the accumulation of knowledge. I stop walking just long enough to bring my heel up, hard between his legs. A high-pitched cry hitches in his throat, stopped before it really began, and his hands go limp for just a moment. In that moment, I twist my body as hard as I can and break free. I don't know where I will run, but I have to run. I have to. He grabs my elbow, yanking me back, and pushes his thumb into the wound on my shoulder, twisting until pain makes my vision go black at the edges, and I scream at the top of my lungs. I thought I recalled from the footage of you in that water tank that you got shot in that shoulder, he says. It seems I was right. My knees crumple beneath me, and he grabs my collar, almost carelessly dragging me toward the elevator bank. The fabric digs into my throat, choking me, and I stumble after him. My body throbs with lingering pain. When we reach the elevator bank, he forces me to my knees next to the candor woman I saw earlier. She and four others sit between the two rows of elevators, kept in place by Dauntless with guns. I want one gun on her at all times, says Eric. Not just aimed at her. On her. A Dauntless man pushes a gun barrel into the back of my neck. It forms a cold circle on my skin. I lift my eyes to Eric. His face is red, his eyes watering. What's the matter, Eric? I say, raising my eyebrows. Afraid of a little girl? I'm not stupid, he says, pushing his hands through his hair. That little girl act may have worked on me before, but it won't work again. You're the best attack dog they've got. He leans closer to me. Which is why I'm sure you'll be put down soon enough. One of the elevator doors opens, and a Dauntless soldier shoves Uriah, whose lips are stained with blood, toward the short row of the Divergent. Uriah glances at me, but I can't read his expression well enough to know if he succeeded or failed. If he's here, he probably failed. Now they'll find all the Divergent in the building, and most of us will die. I should probably be afraid, but instead a hysterical laugh bubbles inside me, because I just remembered something. Maybe I can't hold a gun, but I have a knife in my back pocket. Chapter 16. I shift my hand back, centimeter by centimeter, so the soldier pointing a gun at me doesn't notice. The elevator doors open again, bringing more of the Divergent with more Dauntless traitors. The candor woman on my right whimpers. Strands of her hair are stuck to her lips, which are wet with spit or tears, I can't tell. My hand reaches the corner of my back pocket. I keep it steady, my fingers shaking with anticipation. I have to wait for the right moment, when Eric is close. I focus on the mechanics of my breathing, imagining air filling every part of my lungs as I inhale, then remembering as I exhale how all my blood, oxygenated and unoxygenated, travels to and from the same heart. It's easier to think of biology than the line of the Divergent sitting between the elevators. A candor boy who can't be older than 11 sits to my left. He's braver than the woman to my right. He stares at the Dauntless soldier in front of him,
unflinching.
Air in, air out. Blood pushed all the way to my extremities. The heart is a powerful muscle, the strongest muscle in the body in terms of longevity. More Dauntless arrive, reporting successful sweeps of specific floors of the Merciless Mart. Hundreds of people unconscious on the floor, shot with something other than bullets, and I have no idea why. But I am thinking of the heart. Not of my heart anymore, but of Eric's, and how empty his chest will sound when his heart is no longer beating. Despite how much I hate him, I don't really want to kill him. At least not with a knife, up close where I can see the life leave him. But I have one chance left to do something useful, and if I want to hit the erudite where it hurts, I have to take one of their leaders from them. I noticed that no one ever brought the candor girl I warned to the elevator bank, which means she must have gotten away. Good. Eric clasps his hands behind his back and begins to pace back and forth before the line of divergent. My orders are to take only two of you back to erudite headquarters for testing, says Eric. The rest of you are to be executed. There are several ways to determine who among you will be least useful to us. His footsteps slow when he approaches me. I tense my fingers, about to grab the knife handle. But he doesn't come close enough. He keeps walking and stops in front of the boy to my left. The brain finishes developing at age 25, says Eric. Therefore, your divergence is not completely developed. He lifts his gun and fires. A strangled scream leaps out of my body as the boy slumps to the ground, and I squeeze my eyes shut. Every muscle in my body strains toward him, but I hold myself back. Wait, wait, wait. I can't think of the boy. Wait. I force my eyes open and blink tears from them. My scream accomplished one thing. Now Eric stands in front of me smiling. I caught his attention.
You are also rather young, he says.
Nowhere near finished developing. He steps toward me. My fingertips inch closer to the knife handle. Most of the divergent get two results in the aptitude test. Some only get one. No one has ever gotten three. Not because of aptitude, but simply because in order to get that result, you have to refuse to choose something, he says, moving closer still. I tilt my head back to look at him, at all the metal gleaming in his face, at his empty eyes.
My superiors suspect that you got two, Triss, he says. They don't think you're that complex. Just an even blend of abnegation and dauntless. Selfless to the point of idiocy. Or is that brave to the point of idiocy?
I close my hand around the knife handle and squeeze. He leans closer.
Just between you and me, I think you might have gotten three. Because you're the kind of bullheaded person who would refuse to make a simple choice just because she was told to, he says. Care to enlighten me?
I lurch forward, pulling my hand out of my pocket. I close my eyes as I thrust the blade up and toward him. I don't want to see his blood. I feel the knife go in and then pull it out again. My entire body throbs to the rhythm of my heart. The back of my neck is sticky with sweat. I open my eyes as Eric slumps to the ground, and then, chaos. The Dauntless traitors aren't holding lethal guns, only ones that shoot whatever it is they shot at us before, so they all scramble for their real guns. As they do, Uriah launches himself at one of them and punches him hard in the jaw. The life goes out of the soldier's eyes and he falls, knocked out. Uriah takes the soldier's gun and starts shooting at the Dauntless closest to us. I reach for Eric's gun, so panicked I can barely see, and when I look up, I swear the amount of Dauntless in the room has doubled. Gunshots fill my ears, and I drop to the ground as everyone starts running. My fingers brush the gun barrel, and I shudder. My hands are too weak to grasp it. A heavy arm wraps around my shoulders and shoves me toward the wall. My right shoulder burns, and I see the Dauntless symbol tattooed on the back of a neck. Tobias turns, crouched around me to shield me from the gunfire and shoots. Tell me if anyone's behind me, he says. I peer over his shoulder, curling my hands into fists around his shirt. There are more Dauntless in the room. Dauntless without blue armbands. Loyal Dauntless. My faction. My faction has come to save us. How are they awake? The Dauntless traitors sprint away from the elevator bank. They were not prepared for an attack, not from all sides. Some of them fight back, but most run for the stairs. Tobias fires over and over again, until his gun runs out of bullets and the trigger makes a clicking sound instead. My vision is too blurry with tears, and my hands too useless to fire a gun. I scream into gritted teeth, frustrated. I can't help. I am worthless. On the floor, Eric moans. Still alive for now. The gunshots gradually stop. My hand is wet. One glimpse of red tells me it's covered in blood. Eric's. I wipe it off on my pants and try to blink the tears away. My ears ring. Triss, Tobias says. You can put the knife down now. Chapter 17. Tobias tells me this story. When the erudite reached the lobby stairwell, one of them didn't go up to the second floor. Instead, she ran up to one of the highest levels of the building. There she evacuated a group of loyal Dauntless, including Tobias, to a fire escape the Dauntless traitors had not sealed off. Those loyal Dauntless gathered in the lobby and split into four groups that stormed the stairwell simultaneously, surrounded the Dauntless traitors, who had clustered around the elevator banks. The Dauntless traitors were not prepared for that much resistance. They thought everyone but the Divergent was unconscious. So they ran. The erudite woman was Kara, Will's older sister. Heaving a sigh, I let the jacket slide from my arms and examine my shoulder. A metal disc, about the size of my pinky fingernail, is pressed against my skin. Surrounding it is a patch of blue strands, like someone injected blue dye into the tiny veins just beneath the surface of my skin. Frowning, I try to peel the metal disc away from my arm and feel a sharp pain. Gritting my teeth, I wedge the flat of my knife blade under the disc and force it up. I scream into my teeth as the pain races through me, making everything go black for a moment. But I keep pushing, as hard as I can, until the disc lifts from my skin enough for me to get my fingers around it. Attached to the bottom of the disc is a needle. I gag. Grasp the disc in my fingertips and pull one last time. This time, the needle comes free. It's as long as my littlest finger, and smeared with my blood. I ignore the blood running down my arm, and hold the disc and the needle up to the light above the sink. Judging by the blue dye in my arm and the needle, they must have injected us with something. But what? Poison? An explosive? I shake my head. If they had wanted to kill us, most of us were unconscious already, so they could have just shot us all. Whatever they injected us with isn't meant to kill us. Someone knocks on the door. I don't know why. I'm in a public restroom after all. Triss, you in there? Uriah's muffled voice asks. Yeah, I call back. Uriah looks better than he did an hour ago. He washed the blood from his mouth, and some of the color has returned to his face. I'm struck, suddenly, by how handsome he is. All his features are proportionate. His eyes dark and lively, his skin bronze brown. And he has probably always been that handsome. Only boys who have been handsome from a young age have that arrogance in their smile. Not like Tobias, who is almost shy when he smiles. Like he is surprised you bothered to look at him in the first place. My throat aches. I put the needle and the disc on the edge of the sink. Uriah looks from me to the needle in my hand to the line of blood running from my shoulder to my wrist. Gross, he says. Wasn't paying attention, I say. I set the needle down and grab a paper towel, mopping up the blood on my arm. How are the others? Marlene's cracking jokes, as usual. Uriah's smile grows, putting a dimple in his cheek. Lynn's grumbling. Wait, you yanked that out of your own arm? He points to the needle. God, Triss, do you have no nerve endings or something? I think I need a bandage.
You think? Uriah shakes his head. You should get some ice for your face, too.
So, everyone's waking up now. It's a madhouse out there.
I touch my jaw. It is tender where Eric's gun struck me. I will have to put healing salve on it so it doesn't bruise.
Is Eric dead?
I don't know which answer I'm hoping for. Yes or no?
No. Some of the candor decided to give him medical treatment.
Uriah scowls at the sink.
Something about honorable treatment of prisoners. King's interrogating him in private right now.
Doesn't want us there. Disturbing the peace or whatever.
I snort.
Yeah. Anyway, no one gets it, he says, perching on the edge of the sink next to mine.
Why storm in here and fire those things at us and then knock us all out? Why not just kill us?
No idea, I say. The only use I see for it is that it helped them figure out who's divergent and who's not. But that can't be the only reason they did it.
I don't get why they have it out for us.
I mean, when they were trying to mind control themselves an army, sure, but now? Seems useless.
I frown as I press a clean paper towel to my shoulder to stop the bleeding.
He's right. Janine already has an army. So why kill the Divergent now?
Janine doesn't want to kill everyone, I say slowly.
She knows that would be illogical. Without each faction, society doesn't function, because each faction trains its members for particular jobs. What she wants is control.
I glance up at my reflection. My jaw is swollen, and fingernail marks are still on my arms.
Disgusting.
She must be planning another simulation, I say. Same thing as before.
But this time, she wants to make sure that everyone is either under its influence or dead.
But the simulation only lasts for a certain period of time, he says. It's not useful unless you're trying to accomplish something specific.
Right, I sigh. I don't know. I don't get it.
I pick up the needle.
I don't get what this thing is either. If it was like the other simulation-inducing injections, it was just meant for one use. So why shoot these things at us just to put us unconscious? It doesn't make any sense.
I don't know, Triss, but right now we've got a huge building full of panicked people to deal with. Let's go get you a bandage.
He pauses and then says, Can you do me a favor?
What is it?
Don't tell anyone I'm Divergent.
He bites his lip.
Shauna's my friend, and I don't want her to suddenly become afraid of me.
Sure,
I say, forcing a smile. I'll keep it to myself.
I am awake all night removing needles from people's arms. After a few hours, I stop trying to be gentle. I just pull as hard as I can. I find out that the candor boy Eric shot in the head was named Bobby, and that Eric is in stable condition. And that of the hundreds of people in the Merciless Mart, only 80 don't have needles buried in their flesh, 70 of whom are dauntless, one of whom is Christina. All night I puzzle over needles and serums and simulations, trying to inhabit the minds of my enemies. In the morning, I run out of needles to remove and go to the cafeteria, rubbing my eyes. Jack Kang announced that we would have a meeting at noon, so maybe I can fit in a long nap after I eat. When I walk into the cafeteria, though, I see Caleb. Caleb runs up to me and folds me carefully into his arms. I breathe a sigh of relief. I thought I had gotten to the point where I didn't need my brother anymore. But I don't think such a point actually exists. I relax against him for a moment and catch Tobias's eye over Caleb's shoulder.
Are you all right? Caleb says, pulling back.
Your jaw.
It's nothing, I say. Just swollen.
I heard they got a bunch of the Divergent and started shooting them. Thank God they didn't find you.
Actually, they did. But they only killed one, I say. I pinch the bridge of my nose to relieve some of the pressure in my head.
But I'm all right. When did you get here?
About 10 minutes ago.
I came with Marcus, he says.
As our only legal political leader, he felt it was his duty to be here. We didn't hear about the attack until an hour ago.
One of the factionless saw the Dauntless storming into the building, and news takes a while to travel among the factionless.
Marcus is alive? I say. We never actually saw him die when he escaped the Amity compound. But I just assumed he had. I'm not sure how I feel. Disappointed, maybe, because I hate him for how he treated Tobias? Or relieved because the last abnegation leader is still alive? Is it possible to feel both?
He and Peter escaped and walked back to the city, says Caleb. I'm not at all relieved to find out that Peter is still alive.
Where's Peter, then?
He is where you would expect him to be, Caleb replies.
Erudite, I say. I shake my head.
What a...
I can't even think of a word strong enough to describe him. Apparently I need to expand my vocabulary.
Caleb's face twists for a moment. Then he nods and touches my shoulder.
Are you hungry? Want me to get you something?
Yes, please, I say. I'll be back in a little while, okay? I have to talk to Tobias.
All right.
Caleb squeezes my arm and walks off, probably to get in the miles-long cafeteria line. Tobias and I stand yards away from each other for a few seconds. He approaches me slowly.
You okay? He says.
I might throw up if I have to answer that one more time, I say. I don't have a bullet in my head, do I? So I'm good.
Your jaw's so swollen you look like you have a wad of food in your cheek.
And you just stabbed Eric, he says, frowning.
I'm not allowed to ask if you're okay.
I sigh. I should tell him about Marcus, but I don't want to do it here, with so many people around.
Yeah, I'm okay.
His arm jerks like he was thinking of touching me, but decided against it. Then he reconsiders and slides his arm around me, pulling me to him. Suddenly, I think maybe I'll let someone else take all the risks. Maybe I'll just start acting selfishly so that I can stay close to Tobias without hurting him. All I want is to bury my face in his neck and forget anything else exists.
I'm sorry it took me so long to come get you,
he whispers into my hair. I sigh and touch his back with just my fingertips. I could stand here until I go unconscious from exhaustion, but I shouldn't. I can't. I pull back and say, I need to talk to you. Can we go somewhere quiet? He nods, and we leave the cafeteria. One of the Dauntless we pass yells,
Oh, look! It's Tobias Eaton!
I had almost forgotten about the interrogation, and the name it revealed to all of Dauntless. Another one yells,
I saw your daddy here earlier, Eaton. Are you gonna go hide?
Tobias straightens and stiffens, like someone is training a gun at his chest instead of jeering at him.
Yeah, are you gonna hide, coward?
A few people around us laugh. I grab Tobias's arm and steer him toward the elevators before he can react. He looked like he was about to punch someone. Or worse.
I was going to tell you. He came with Caleb, I say. He and Peter escaped Amity.
What were you waiting for, then? He says, but not harshly. His voice sounds somehow detached from him, like it is floating between us.
It's not the kind of news you deliver in a cafeteria, I say.
Fair enough, he says. We wait in silence for the elevator, Tobias chewing on his lip and staring into space. He does that all the way to the 18th floor, which is empty. There. The silence wraps around me like Caleb's embrace did, calming me. I sit down on one of the benches on the edge of the interrogation room, and Tobias pulls Niles's chair over to sit in front of me.
Didn't there used to be two of these? He says, frowning at the chair.
Yeah, I say. It got thrown out the window.
Strange, he says.
He sits.
So what did you want to talk about?
Or was that about Marcus?
No, that wasn't it.
Are you all right?
I say cautiously.
I don't have a bullet in my head, do I? He says, staring at his hands.
So I'm fine.
I'd like to talk about something else.
I want to talk about simulations, I say.
But first, something else. Your mother thought Janine would go after the factionless next. Obviously, she was wrong, and I'm not sure why. It's not like the Kandor are battle-ready or anything. Well, think about it, he says. Think it through, like the erudite. I give him a look. What? He says. If you can't, the rest of us have no hope. Fine, I say. It had to be because Dauntless and Kandor were the most logical targets. Because the factionless are in multiple places, whereas we're all in the same place. Right, he says. Also, when Janine attacked Abnegation, she got all the Abnegation data. My mother told me that the Abnegation had documented the factionless divergent populations, which means that after the attack, Janine must have found out that the proportion of divergent among the factionless is higher than among the Kandor. That makes them an illogical target. All right. Then tell me about the serum again, I say. It has a few parts, right? Two, he says, nodding. The transmitter and the liquid that induces the simulation. The transmitter communicates information to the brain from the computer, and vice versa. And the liquid alters the brain to put it in a simulation state. I nod. And the transmitter only works for one simulation, right? What happens to it after that? It dissolves, he says. As far as I know, the erudite haven't been able to develop a transmitter that lasts for more than one simulation. Although the attack simulation lasted far longer than any simulation I've seen before. The words, as far as I know, stick in my mind. Janine has spent most of her adult life developing the serums. If she's still hunting down the Divergent, she's probably still obsessed with creating more advanced versions of the technology. What's this about, Triss? He says. Have you seen this yet? I say, pointing at the bandage covering my shoulder. Not up close, he says. Zeke and I were hauling wounded erudite up to the fourth floor all morning. I peel away the edge of the bandage, revealing the puncture wound, no longer bleeding, thankfully, and the patch of blue dye that doesn't seem to be fading. Then I reach into my pocket and take out the needle that was buried in my arm. When they attacked, they weren't trying to kill us. They were shooting us with these, I say. His hand touches the dyed skin around the puncture wound. I didn't notice it before because it was happening right in front of me. But he looks different than he used to, during initiation. He's let his facial hair grow in a little, and his hair is longer than I've ever seen it, dense enough to show me that it is brown, not black. He takes the needle from me and taps the metal disc at the end of it. This is probably hollow. It must have contained whatever that blue stuff in your arm is. What happened after you were shot? They tossed these gas-spewing cylinders into the room, and everyone went unconscious. That is, everyone but Uriah and me and the other Divergent. Tobias doesn't seem surprised. I narrow my eyes. Did you know that Uriah was Divergent? He shrugs. Of course. I ran his simulations, too. And you never told me? Privileged information, he says. Dangerous information. I feel a flare of anger. How many things is he going to keep from me? And try to stifle it. Of course he couldn't tell me Uriah was Divergent. He was just respecting Uriah's privacy. It makes sense. I clear my throat. You saved our lives, you know, I say. Eric was trying to hunt us down. I think we're past keeping track of who has saved whose life. He looks at me for a few long seconds. Anyway, I say to break the silence. After we figured out that everyone was asleep, Uriah ran upstairs to warn the people who were up there, and I went to the second floor to figure out what was going on. Eric hit all the Divergent by the elevators, and he was trying to figure out which of us he was going to take back with him. He said he was allowed to take two. I don't know why he was going to take any. Odd, he says. Any ideas? My guess is that the needle injected you with a transmitter, he says. And the gas was an aerosol version of the liquid that alters the brain. But why?
A crease appears between his eyebrows.
Oh.
She put everyone to sleep to find out who the Divergent were. You think that's the only reason for shooting us with transmitters?
He shakes his head, and his eyes lock on mine. Their blue is so dark and familiar that I feel like it could swallow me whole. For a moment, I wish it would, so that I could escape this place and all that has happened.
I think you've already figured it out, he says. But you want me to contradict you.
And I'm not going to. They've developed a long-lasting transmitter, I say.
He nods.
So now we're all wired for multiple simulations, I add.
As many as Janine wants, maybe.
He nods again. My next breath shakes on the way out of my mouth.
This is really bad, Tobias.
In the hallway outside the interrogation room, he stops, leaning against the wall.
So you attacked Eric, he says.
Was that during the invasion, or when you were by the elevators?
By the elevators, I say.
One thing I don't understand, he says.
You were downstairs. You could have just run away. But instead you decided to dive into a crowd of armed dauntless all by yourself.
And I'm willing to bet you weren't carrying a gun.
I press my lips together.
Is that true? He demands.
What makes you think I didn't have a gun?
I scowl.
You haven't been able to touch a gun since the attack, he says.
I understand why with the whole will thing, but that has nothing to do with it.
No?
He lifts his eyebrows.
I did what I had to do.
Yeah, but now you should be done, he says, pulling away from the wall to face me.
Candor hallways are wide enough for all the space I want to keep between us.
You should have stayed with the Amity. You should have stayed far away from all of this.
No, I shouldn't have, I say.
You think you know what's best for me? You have no idea. I was going crazy with the Amity.
Here, I finally feel sane again.
Which is odd, considering you were acting like a psychopath, he says.
It's not brave, choosing the position you were in yesterday.
It's beyond stupid. It's suicidal. Don't you have any regard for your own life?
Of course I do, I retort. I was trying to do something useful.
For a few seconds, he just stares at me.
You're more than dauntless, he says in a low voice.
But if you want to be just like them, hurling yourself into ridiculous situations for no reason and retaliating against your enemies without any regard for what's ethical, go right ahead. I thought you were better than that, but maybe I was wrong.
I clenched my hands, my jaw.
You shouldn't insult the dauntless, I say.
They took you in when you had nowhere else to go, trusted you with a good job, gave you all your friends.
I lean against the wall, my eyes on the floor. The tiles in the Merciless Mart are always black and white, and here they are in a checkered pattern. If I unfocus my eyes, I see exactly what the Candor don't believe in. Gray. Maybe Tobias and I don't believe in it either.
Not really. I weigh too much, more than my frame can support. So much I should fall right through the floor.
Triss.
I keep staring.
Triss.
I finally look at him.
I just don't want to lose you.
We stand there for a few minutes. I don't say what I'm thinking, which is that he might be right. There is a part of me that wants to be lost, that struggles to join my parents and Will so that I don't have to ache for them anymore.
A part of me that wants to see whatever comes next.
So you're her brother, says Lynn.
I guess we know who got the good genes.
I laugh at the expression on Caleb's face. His mouth drawn into a slight pucker, and his eyes wide.
When do you have to get back? I say, nudging him with my elbow.
I bite into the sandwich Caleb got me from the cafeteria line. I'm nervous to have him here, mixing the sad remains of my family life with the sad remains of my dauntless life. What will he think of my friends, my faction? What will my faction think of him?
Soon, he says. I don't want anyone to worry.
I didn't realize Susan had changed her name to anyone.
I say, raising an eyebrow.
Ha ha, he says, making a face at me. Teasing between siblings should feel familiar, but it doesn't for us. Abnegation discouraged anything that might make someone feel uncomfortable, and teasing was included. I can feel how cautious we are with each other, now that we're discovering a different way to relate in light of our new factions, and our parents' deaths. Every time I look at him, I realize that he's the only family I have left, and I feel desperate. Desperate to keep him around. Desperate to narrow the gap between us.
Is Susan another erudite defector? Says Lynn, stabbing a string bean with her fork.
Uriah and Tobias are still in the lunch line, waiting behind 24 candor who are too busy bickering to get their food.
No, she was our neighbor when we were kids. She's abnegation, I say.
And you're involved with her? She asks Caleb.
Don't you think that's kind of a stupid move? I mean, when all this is over, you'll be in different factions, living in completely different places.
Lynn, Marlene says, touching her shoulder. Shut up, will you? Across the room, something blue catches my attention. Kara just walked in. I put down my sandwich, my appetite gone, and look up at her with my head lowered. She walks to the far corner of the cafeteria, where a few tables of erudite refugees sit. Most of them have abandoned their blue clothes in favor of black and white ones, but they still wear their glasses. I try to focus on Caleb instead, but Caleb is watching the erudite too. I can't go back to erudite any more than they can, says Caleb. When this is over, I won't have a faction. For the first time, I notice how sad he looks when he talks about the erudite. I didn't realize how difficult the decision to leave them must have been for him.
You could go sit with them,
I say, nodding toward the erudite refugees.
I don't know them, he shrugs.
I was only there for a month, remember? Uriah drops his tray on the table, scowling.
I overheard someone talking about Eric's interrogation in the lunch line. Apparently he knew almost nothing about Janine's plan.
What? Lynn slaps her fork on the table. How is that even possible? Uriah shrugs and sits.
I'm not surprised, Caleb says. Everyone stares at him.
What?
He flushes.
It would be stupid to confide your entire plan to one person. It's infinitely smarter to give little pieces of it to each person working with you. That way, if someone betrays you, the loss isn't too great.
Oh, says Uriah. Lynn picks up her fork and starts eating again.
I heard the candor made ice cream, says Marlene, twisting her head around to see the lunch line. You know, as a kind of, it sucks we got attacked, but at least there are desserts thing.
I feel better already, says Lynn dryly.
It probably won't be as good as Dauntless cake, says Marlene mournfully.
She sighs and a strand of mousy brown hair falls in her eyes.
We had good cake, I tell Caleb.
We had fizzy drinks, he says.
Ah, but did you have a ledge overlooking an underground river?
Says Marlene, waggling her eyebrows.
Or a room where you faced all your nightmares at once?
No, says Caleb. And to be honest, I'm kind of okay with that.
Sissy, sings Marlene.
All your nightmares? Says Caleb, his eyes lighting up. How does that work? I mean, are the nightmares produced by the computer or by your brain?
Oh, God. Lynn drops her head into her hands. Here we go.
Marlene launches into a description of the simulations, and I let her voice, and Caleb's voice, wash over me as I finish my sandwich. Then, despite the clatter of forks and the roar of hundreds of conversations all around me, I rest my head on the table and fall asleep.
Chapter 18.
Quiet down, everyone!
Jack Kang lifts his hands, and the crowd goes silent. That is a talent. I stand among the crowd of Dauntless who got here late, when there were no seats left. A flash of light catches my eye. Lightning.
It's not the best time to be meeting in a room with holes in the walls instead of windows, but this is the biggest room they have.
I know many of you are confused and shaken by what happened yesterday, Jack says. I have heard many reports from a variety of perspectives and have gotten a sense for what is straightforward and what requires more investigation.
I tuck my wet hair behind my ears. I woke up 10 minutes before the meeting was supposed to start and ran to the showers. Though I'm still exhausted, I feel more alert now.
What seems to me to require more investigation, Jack says, is the Divergent.
He looks tired. He has dark circles under his eyes, and his short hair sticks out at random, like he's been pulling it all night. Despite the stifling heat of the room, he wears a long-sleeve shirt that buttons at the wrists. He must have been distracted when he dressed this morning.
If you are one of the Divergent, please step forward so that we can hear from you.
I look sideways at Uriah. This feels dangerous. My divergence is something I'm supposed to hide. Admitting it is supposed to mean death. But there is no sense in hiding it now. They already know about me. Tobias is the first to move. He starts into the crowd, at first turning his body to wedge his way between people, and then, when they step back from him, moving straight toward Jack Kang, with his shoulders back. I move too, muttering, "Excuse me," to the people in front of me. They draw back like I just threatened to spit poison at them. A few others step forward, in candor black and white, but not many. One of them is the girl I helped. Despite the notoriety Tobias now has among the Dauntless, and my new title as that girl who stabbed Eric, we are not the real focus of everyone's attention. Marcus is.
You. Marcus? Says Jack when Marcus reaches the middle of the room and stands on top of the lower scale in the floor.
Yes, Marcus says. I understand that you are concerned. That you are all concerned. You had never heard of the Divergent a week ago. And now all that you know is that they are immune to something to which you are susceptible. And that is a frightening thing. But I can assure you that there is nothing to be afraid of, as far as we are concerned.
As he speaks, his head tilts and his eyebrows lift in sympathy. And I understand at once why some people like him. He makes you feel that if you just placed everything in his hands, he would take care of it.
It seems clear to me, says Jack, that we were attacked so that Erudite could find the Divergent. Do you know why that is?
No, I do not, says Marcus.
Perhaps their intention was merely to identify us. It seems like useful information to have if they intend to use their simulations again.
That was not their intention. The words are past my lips before I decide to speak them. My voice sounds high and weak compared to Marcus's and Jack's, but it's too late to stop. They wanted to kill us. They've been killing us since before any of this happened. Jack's eyebrows draw together. I hear hundreds of tiny sounds, raindrops hitting the roof. The room darkens, as if under the gloom of what I just said.
That sounds very much like a conspiracy theory, Jack says. What reason would the Erudite have to kill you?
My mother said people feared the Divergent because we couldn't be controlled. That may be true, but fear of the uncontrollable is not a concrete enough reason to give Jack Kang for the Erudite wanting us dead. My heart races as I realize that I can't answer his question. I start. Tobias interrupts me.
Obviously we don't know, he says.
But there are nearly a dozen mysterious deaths recorded among the Dauntless from the past 6 years, and there is a correlation between those people and irregular aptitude test results, or initiation simulation results. Lightning strikes, making the room glow. Jack shakes his head.
While that is intriguing, correlation does not constitute evidence.
A Dauntless leader shot a Kander child in the head, I snap. Did you get a report of that? Did it seem worthy of investigation?
In fact, I did, he says. And shooting a child in cold blood is a terrible crime that cannot go unpunished. Fortunately,
We have the perpetrator in custody and will be able to put him on trial. However, we must keep in mind that the Dauntless soldiers did not give any evidence of wanting to harm the majority of us, or they would have killed us while we were unconscious. I hear irritated murmurs all around me. Their peaceful invasion suggests to me that it may be possible to negotiate a peace treaty with the Erudite and the other Dauntless, he continues. So I will arrange a meeting with Janine Matthews to discuss that possibility as soon as possible. Their invasion wasn't peaceful, I say. I can see the corner of Tobias's mouth from where I stand, and he is smiling. I take a deep breath and begin again. Just because they didn't shoot you all in the head doesn't mean their intentions were somehow honorable. Why do you think they came here? Just to run through your hallways, knock you unconscious, and leave?
I assume they came here for people like you, says Jack. And while I am concerned for your safety, I don't think we can attack them just because they wanted to kill a fraction of our population.
Killing you is not the worst thing they can do to you, I say. Controlling you is.
Jack's lips curl with amusement.
Amusement?
Oh?
And how will they manage that?
They shot you with needles, Tobias says.
Needles full of simulation transmitters. Simulations control you. That's how.
We know how simulations work, says Jack. The transmitter is not a permanent implant. If they intended to control us, they would have done it right away.
But, I begin, he interrupts me. I know. You have been under a lot of stress, Triss, he says quietly, and that you have done a great service to your faction and to abnegation. But I think your traumatic experience may have compromised your ability to be completely objective. I can't launch an attack based on a little girl's speculations.
I stand statue still, unable to believe that he could be so stupid, my face burning.
Little girl, he called me.
A little girl who is stressed out to the point of paranoia.
That is not me, but now, it's who the Kander think I am.
You don't make our decisions for us, Kang, says Tobias.
All around me, the Dauntless shout their assent. Someone else yells, You are not the leader of our faction!
Jack waits for their shouts to die down and then says, That is true. If you want to, you can feel free to storm the Erudite compound by yourselves. But you will do so without our support. And may I remind you are greatly outnumbered and unprepared.
He's right. We can't attack Dauntless traitors and Erudite without Kander's numbers. It would be a bloodbath if we tried.
Jack Kang has all the power.
And now we all know it.
I thought so, he says smugly. Very well. I will contact Janine Matthews and see if we can negotiate a peace. Any objections?
We can't attack without Kander, I think. Unless we have the factionless.
Chapter 19. That afternoon I join a group of Kander and Dauntless cleaning up the broken windows in the lobby. I focus on the path of the broom, keeping my eyes on the dust that collects between glass fragments. My muscles remember the movement before the rest of me does, but when I look down, instead of dark marble, I see plain white tile in the bottom of a light gray wall. I see strands of blonde hair that my mother trimmed, in the mirror safely tucked behind its wall panel. My body goes weak, and I lean into the broom handle for support. A hand touches my shoulder, and I twitch away from it. But it's just a Kander girl. A child. She looks up at me wide-eyed.
Are you all right?
She says, her voice high and indistinct. I'm fine, I say, too sharply. I hurry to amend it. Just tired.
Thank you.
I think you're lying, she says. I notice a bandage peeking out from the end of her sleeve, probably covering the needle puncture. The idea of this little girl under a simulation nauseates me,
I can't even look at her. I turn away, and I see them. Outside, a traitor dauntless man propping up a woman with a bleeding leg. I see the gray streaks in the woman's